Okay. Thank you. Definitely more students than in my classes. There are four people presenting today. We kind of try to combine our expertise. That's just me. I'm teaching at a university in Germany. This is Mr. Thiele. He's my assistant. Mr. Sander Beuermann. He is the grandfather of German search technology. And Michael Christen, he is the developer of one of the best, or at least one of the most innovative German search engines here. Okay, so next slide, please. Those are basically the speakers here. Next. Okay, we will talk about search engine politics, search engine technology, and we will provide some, let's call that entertaining examples of search engines or search features, and if you have enough time, then we will end with a short discussion, or you can provide your questions. Next. Next. Okay. A short history of search engines. Can I use that? I try to figure out the major steps or the major steps in the timeline of search engine technology. It more or less started in 1989 with Tim Berners-Lee, the World Wide Web as we know it. First web browser immediately afterwards, and then Lycos, another search engine that most of you will not know anymore, basically provided the first automatic algorithm. Yahoo established a directory in 1994. 1998, MSN developed an other Me Too product. 1999, Google came out. I think that's rather important because we need to realize when we talk about search engines or when we talk about the stock market of Google or whatsoever, we shall realize that thing is barely 6 years old. 2004, Google claimed to have 8 billion documents indexed. In 2005, Yahoo claimed mine is bigger. Since then, Google is claiming nothing anymore. In 2005, 2006, we hopefully will change that, or we will reverse the tide, and we eventually start with that conference here. Next. There's a search engine market in 1999, just 6 years ago. Yahoo occupying around 50% of the market. It's more or less based on the fact that they were the first one with a directory. And then we see some other things that most of you will eventually not be able to spell anymore. AltaVista, Excite, InfoSeek, Hotbot, WebCrawler, and so on. Quite interesting, we still see 8 or 10 search engines within that market, and there's a rest of 8% still occupied by other unnamed search engines. Next. 2004, it looked already a little bit different. Yahoo came up, occupying a major share. Google came up, Yahoo reduced to something like 40%. MSN, still AltaVista, Lycos, Ask Jeeves. Next one. In reality, however, the market looks a little bit different because many of those so-called search engines do not provide their own search services anymore. Instead, they basically buy the search results from another company. And that's basically indicated in their chart here. Nowadays, we only have 3 or 4 major players, Google, Yahoo, MSN, and Amazon. Next. The real market in 2004 would look something like that. The German market of 2005 will be presented later by Mr. Sander Beuermann. Next. Why are search engines important? Actually, I can answer that, or I can provide a very simple answer. When I get the assignments of my students back, I have to realize that the trend to own a second book is going out of fashion today. Most of my students provide me with sources or citations that are either copied straight from Wikipedia or from other even crazier resources. which is quite interesting if you actually look at these examples. If they are good, then at least they provide the citations. Most of them simply rely on copy and paste. For them, search engines are libraries. They are wisdom. They are knowledge. They cannot even spell library anymore. Next. Now, what we see is search engines more or less act as the guardians of wisdom. Or we even call them search engines. Funny thing is actually, if you look, however, at their business model, the business model of them, or their business model, is not providing search services. So what we would like to make clear here is when we talk about search engines, we are actually talking about a semantic failure. Because what they are in reality are sales engines. If you look at the revenue streams of a search engine, you will find everything. You will find advertising, sponsored or premium results, and paid results. But you will only find 1% licenses or search services. This is the annual report of Google. So that means only 1% of the annual revenue, basically, is provided by offering quality search services. Then there's another thing that we agreed to make clear here. Within that presentation, our focus will be a little bit on Google. There are several reasons for that, including that they are the market leader, that they came up with the search business model, that they were the first one really discussing, at least, a primitive algorithm, that they are now the first ones also offering at least simple APIs, and that they at least made a funny IPO. That still means we show them some respect, also they deserve some respect, but they certainly deserve the criticism as well. Next. Okay, we discussed the monopoly function before already. We mentioned it. Next. Now, when we talk about search engines, we see it's obviously no big deal if one company is owning 85% of the market. Now, if you look at TV, however, or the section that I would call bread and games, that's somehow a little bit different. I mean, we have a big trouble now concerning the merger of ProSieben and Sat1 and Springer. Next. When we look at the TV market, we are talking here about 10 or 15%. And we have, I mean, huge issues. I mean, if two major stations connect there or combine there. Next. We even have special institutions called the Bundeskartellamt, which has a specific function, or we have an additional other one next called the German Commission on the Concentration of the Media, which is also focusing on private television. Obviously, that's the only thing they understand as media. No one cares about 85% of the search engine market, which is, again, rather funny because on one side we are talking about entertainment, on the other side we are talking about wisdom or knowledge of future generations, bread and games. Next. Another interesting example, next, the so-called Google Book Search or Google Print function. I'm not quite sure, but I guess most of you have heard or read about that intensively. Next. What they are basically doing is they take any book they can get, scan it in, and then when you look for alphas, when you look for snippets, when you look for lines or whatsoever, they provide you with one or two of these pages, but they certainly do not forget in all cases to include the buy this book function. What they do not mention is the advertising that they're also including there. Next. This is basically how it looks. Next. If you look at Google's business model in general, and biologists would call it a parasite, other people describe that in a different way. They do not plant something. They do not harvest, but God still provides them with enough resources to live on. Basically, what they do is they take the information from someone else. They take the information of entire cultures and societies, reorganize them, shuffle them around, and sell that way or sell that structure. Next. It has some effects because it's not only taking place in the virtual world, it has some effects on the real world as well. for instance, on one thing called libraries, which have some unfortunate attributes. And one of these unfortunate attributes is that you can, that when you try to reduce costs or when you try to make some budget cuts, that unfortunately you cannot fire the people so fast, I mean, as fast as you would like to do that. So what you do is you limit the acquisition, which is, I find two interesting examples. In 2004, for instance, all Bavarian libraries of universities of applied sciences did not have any money anymore to buy new books. In Sachsen-Anhalt, the number of libraries between 1990 and 2004 has been reduced from 1,000 to 350. Next, it gets even better. I was looking up all the libraries in Berlin that have been reduced or that have been limited or closed within a time frame of roughly 5 years. So what we see now is a transition from a public knowledge or public service to a private company. This is what's really going on there. Next slide. There are several business organizations or unions which have a pretty strong standing on that. This is the Berufsverband for Informational Libraries, which has some real issues with that. And they even published, or they generated a webpage called Bibliothekssterben. That's basically the death of public libraries. Next. Where they also make clear what is really at stake here and what the impact of such a distribution of not wealth. It's just not wealth. It's not oil. It is just knowledge really is. Next. Okay, there are some other issues in regard to censorship and surveillance. Next. Where we have one really funny thing called Grundgesetz. That's basically the Constitution of Germany. In paragraph 5, it says or claims something that would be, I mean, in America, you would basically call it the First Amendment. Basically, where everyone has the right to say or read or have an opinion about whatever he wants to do that. When they wrote that constitution, unfortunately, they must have forgotten the fine print. Next one. Because they did not take into consideration the transition from the public to private. We are not talking here about the Stasi anymore. We are not talking here about the Gestapo. We are not even talking here about the NSA. What we are talking here about is the transformation into the private sphere, where, as in Iraq, not the army is really doing the dirty work anymore. For that, we have the contractors and so on. In that case, we have one search engine that is not only providing search services, that search engine is actually providing much more, including profiling more or less every user with every attribute, with every email you write, as long as you use the email server, with every web page you look at through the banner advertising, with every news, with a social network, shopping engine, and so on. They even bought Blocker. Next. Google is also involved in censorship. There are many cases we have presented or discussed them last year. Just two of the most interesting ones in regard to China, where Google has been censored by China, and now in response, Google is censoring for China. They came up with an answer for that called Elgoog, which is more or less a translation of a mirror for Google, which allows Chinese servers still to access these web pages. Next, if we think this is unique for China or other dictatorships, then you might want to reconsider that, because Germany is not that far either, especially in regard to issues dealing with the Nazi past and so on. Next. Okay. We have seen that chart where Google is basically integrating all these search services, which allows them to establish a complete profile of you and all of your features, communication, email, shopping patterns, and so on. Now the Americans came up with something even funnier. They call it the Patriot Act, Next, which allows them to deter and punish terrorist acts in the United States and around the world, to enhance law enforcement investigatory tools, and for other purposes. I guess for other purposes includes kidnapping German citizens. But it certainly includes providing every interested party in the United States with your personal profile based on the fact that your profiles are stored in the United States. And that means the Patriot Act doesn't even provide you with the same security that you would get if you would be an American citizen, a brave American citizen. Next. And there are other issues as well, so-called brain drain. We think that applies only to third world countries. Next. Forget about that. That's the same for Germany as well. I tried to figure out how is Google actually contributing to search engine research corporations in Germany or in Europe? That is the answer I got for the people here in the audience who cannot speak German. I will try to translate it. Dear professor, unfortunately I cannot help you. Google does not provide or work or cooperate with master thesis projects with German universities. We only provide you with lower class services. Yours sincerely, and so on. Next. There are some other issues here. Currently, worldwide, we have only two research centers, search engine-wise, outside of the United States. One is in Bangalore, makes sense, and the other one is in Zurich, and that is based on the fact that two of the major players within Google, Urs Hölzle and Monika Hansinger, basically came from Switzerland, and now they are, at least Monika is moving back, or has been moving back, as far as I know. That has an impact. That's not as easy as it sounds, because in some of these areas there is a certain national interest in regard to that knowledge, wisdom, know-how. To put it even simpler, if Google is not cooperating with German universities or other search engines as well, we are not talking here about Google, then the result means I cannot train my students to work or research on these issues, and that means I lose them to the dark side. Basically, what they do is either hacking or doing marketing. I'm not quite sure which one is worse. Current job descriptions, if you look at the job descriptions at the Google website for Germany, you will figure out that they are mostly focused on sales or marketing. They do not produce knowledge. They treat us like a third world country. Japan and China have already responded to that. They are now focusing on developing their own state-sponsored search engines. I have some issues with that, but at least chose an alternative to deal with that. Google recently has announced a European research center in Germany. There are no detailed figures about that anymore. However, when they publish the figures, I will certainly compare them with the new Red Lab that they have just now sponsored together with Microsoft and Sun. That sounds rather fishy, for $7.5 million, which allows them just the money to hire 10 computer science graduates. $7 million. Next. Now it's getting even funnier. They don't even hesitate to take it from the poor and the helpless. Next. Google has developed one function called outer link. To be honest, must be said, you have to activate the outer link function within the Google toolbar. That thing is basically connecting any standard issue information and trying to make a link out of that. So far, so good. Next. There are some institutions, however, that make a living from these links or resources. For instance, I was just looking for one. I'm not quite sure if that's a good one. I was just looking for one at Google. The National Association for the People Abused in Childhood. I was trying to figure out one of the most extreme examples. And they basically make a living, or they keep their website alive through or with the affiliate commissions that they get from book references to Amazon and so on. Now, what is Google doing next? Google is enhancing that feature, taking away the links and replacing their affiliate ID with Google owns affiliate ID. So basically stealing them the money or the links. And this is something that really bothers me. Next. There are some options and alternatives, and just I will briefly mention them. Next. For instance, transferring all the knowledge that we have already produced or that taxpayers have already paid for into the public domain. That also means transferring search engine knowledge into the public domain. That could, for instance, mean transferring Google, or at least the Google database, into the public domain. I'm not only talking about APIs. I'm really talking about taking it away. Are the latest distributed search engines, and so on. But we will hear more about that from Mr. Sander Boyermann. Thank you.
Okay, now we're coming to more the technical side of the story, looking at the technical aspects. Let me first introduce a bit more about myself, who I am. My name is long and complicated. I'm working at Hanover University, and my first step in the business of search engines that was MetaGer, German meta search engine. Some of you might still know that. And since about 2000, we started developing own search engines in the research area, researchportal.net. And in last year, I did, for the first time in my life, I founded an association because I was really bothered about the development in the search engine market and what's going on with the search engines. This is a short form, Zuma e.V. is an English site, Association for the Promotion of Search Engine Technology and Free Access to Knowledge. So this started in last year, and I was responsible for that. Now let's come back to the techniques of search engines. And I'd like to start to give you a short introduction. I'm sure most of you will know how a search engine works, but nevertheless, I'll start with a simple example how a search engine might work. Most do not work like that, but some do. In case we have a network. Unfortunately, there seems to be no network connection here. Ah, there it is. Can't read it. Anyway, I'll tell you, it's a real-time search engine. You give it a starting address. You say a web page like zuma-ev.de. Give it a starting address and tell the search engine to start searching at that address. And then you give it a search word like China. And you say search. And now you see what it does. It picks up all the links on the starting page and picks up links and links and looks at every web page if the word China would be found on this page. And you see it down here. After 24 links have been investigated, there's actually one which refers to the same point Mr. Speck already pointed out. It's written down here, the word China. Where is it? It's mentioned here on this press notice where the Google involvement in China is discussed. Now, you've seen when we started this play around search engine, where to click on? When we started this play toy search engine, it took quite some time until it found it. It was only 24 web pages which were investigated, but that already took about 10 seconds or so. This is much too long for real search engines. So most search engines of the real world work like this. They have three components. They have a crawler which moves over the web like you have seen in this play toy. It grabs any website it can find. Then it takes that website, makes an index of it. That means it puts all words which it can find on that page in a database, stores it, and makes this database available over web interface to the user. And that's what you see of the search engine. This is the part the user knows of the search engine. So with this method, you just know what's in the database of the search engines. You don't know what's actually on the website. These databases have to be updated, and Google does it in a period of some days up to some months. So what the search engine, most search engines spits out, it's not what is at the actual time in it. There are developments to check the, do real-time checking. This is a follower of my grandfather's job, like Mr. Spechtold, MetaGer.de, the meta search engine. And if this, yeah, that comes up. This search engine does a real-time checking. It, after the search, let's try the China example again. After the search for China, it actually grabs the websites and checks if this word is really on it. So it's not just a database investigation. Okay. Now, Mr. Speck has already shown you the market shares of the search engines, and I'm focusing on the German market. And I started my timeline back just 2.5 years ago. There was the Google market share of about 67%. And if we look about a year later, it's already 75%. In last year, it was 81%. And around now, we have it about 33%. But this is just the share of Google. And you have to add to this Google share T-Online and AOL search, because they only take Google's results and put it in their own search engine. So you have to add the value of T-Online, this 1.6, and AOL 2.5. You have to add it, and then you are over 85% Google of Google market share in Germany. Now, this shows that most people actually do believe in Google, and you might put in a letter of your whatever you like. Now, this sentence has a second part. I call it a miserable failure to believe in Google, and I will show you an example why I call it a miserable failure. So I click on the Google homepage, and I type in miserable failure. Maybe you know this example. If I haven't mistyped it, and it looks okay, the homepage of George Bush comes out. Now, if you actually look on this homepage, you would not find the words failure and miserable, of course, on this page. So the question might arise where these, how this happens. And the story is very simple. This is tricking Google, dirty tricks against Google, or we might not call them dirty, tricks against Google. Google does not just take the words on the websites. Google takes the words on the links to the website as well. So if you don't like anybody, you put a lot of links to him, and you don't need very, very many. It's about in the range of 1,000 links, and you put ugly names in that links, then these names will show up in the Google results of the web page of the person who wanted to annoy. Now, what options do we have to operate search engines if you do not want to have it as a monopoly? And I've written here a broad spectrum of possibilities. Now, on one side, there's actually the idea that the government could operate a search engine, like in Germany, ARD and ZDF, like the TV stations. There could be a government search engine. Now, I wouldn't trust the government search engine as well. This is a monopoly on the other side. This is one, but it is a possibility, so it's here on this slide. Now, the other possibility is to put it not in one hand of a governmental institution, but to spread it out over libraries and universities and let it run in the, say, in the governmental area. On the other hand, far away or not in the government, there are the private possibilities. Anybody can run a search engine at his home computer, and the next speaker, Michael Christen, will tell you more about this, about a peer-to-peer search engine. and he's the developer of the peer-to-peer search engine Yasi. And this is an opportunity how anybody can connect in global mesh of search engines, which are based on private persons. Now, this system of private search engines or half-private search engines may be organized in different ways. The peer-to-peer example is, say, the most decentralized system one could imagine. You could order it a bit more in a hierarchical way. This was the system I thought of when I mentioned the universities and libraries who might run smaller search engines and combine them by meta searches to global search. These are all opportunities and possibilities one has in this field of general opportunities for running search engines. Now, when I said anybody of you could run a search engine, there must be software available for it, and certainly it is. This is the list of search engine software, at least the one we have tested at Hanover University, and which run more or less comfortable. Right now we actually have two possibilities. Search engine project Nudge, you may have heard of it, is a free software project based in San Francisco with many attendants around the world, in Germany too. And the other side is the peer-to-peer search engine Yasi, and this is actually a real plug-and-play software. None of the other search engine software here is plug-and-play. If you download it, you have to really get into it and get involved. But Yasi actually runs as the one and only search engine software, a plug-and-play software, and Michael Christen will tell you more about how to install and what it does and how it works. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Wolfgang. Good evening. I'm the architect of the peer-to-peer search software Yasi, and I want to tell you something about it. First, what is it? What can it do? It's a search engine containing the standard elements of a search engine, the crawler, an indexer. It has its own built-in database, and it has a search interface based on an HTTP web server. It's running, the web server is running on your computer, and this is all in one simple to install application. But we also added a peer-to-peer network protocol to the search engine, and the search engines can connect to each other. So what can you do with a peer-to-peer network protocol on a search engine? Parts of the protocol is to send parts of the index to other peers, which you can see on the left side, and you can do a crawl in your peer, and you can also distribute parts of the peer, so every peer can send parts of the index and parts of its crawl to other peers. And the most important thing that every peer should be able to receive from other peers is it can receive index fragments from other peers when it does a web search. So the next question is, how should peers be connected in a network? We have two choices. One is connect peers in a hierarchical way, like you see on the left side. But this means it's a centralized technology. And you also need people who moderate the connections between the peers. It can't be spawned automatically. And the other option is to build up a completely decentralized network, as you can see on the right side. It looks a little bit chaotic, but it's not. There are well-known technologies to organize such networks, like using a distributed hash table to organize the data. And that's what we do. And actually, the Yasi network looks like the network on the right side. And I'll show you a picture of the network. This is a drawing of the network 2 months ago, and the dots at the circles are YASI peers. Around it are names of the peers, and we organize the data with a distributed hash table. And there's no central server who organizes that. The network is completely self-organizing. So how can a search can be done in such a network? I will give you an example. Consider the peer on the right side is your own YASI peer, and you do a web search with that peer. That means you open a web page on your local host. It's a local, the standard is localhost port 8080, and you have a search interface like you know it from all other search engines. And if you start a web search, then your peer computes where that part of the index in the network should be and addresses those peers directly. It doesn't scan all the other peers. It just connects to some specific peers which should have the index. And if they have something, they send it back. They are collected and consolidated like a metasearch would do it. They are then ranked afterwards, sorted, and given back on your own search page. The next question is, how can these other peers can have exactly those indexes as they should do? So if you want to address them directly. It's an example of a crawling. Your peer may start a web crawl. You crawl over web pages, do an indexing, and if you have enough index files, they are distributed to other peers. You can imagine it's like a file sharing network, but they are not generally files shared, but only index fragments are shared through all the peers, and they are organized in such a way that the peers get only those indexes as they are expected when some other peer does a search. So they can be addressed directly, and this is relatively fast. We can do a web search now within 6 seconds. It's still much longer than you search with other centralized search engines, but we are working on it, and I think 3 seconds is possible, so this can be really used as a web search engine. The advantages are clear. You can't do a censoring in this network. There's no censoring. It's not possible to take out globally information from it. Every peer owner has the right to remove information from his own peer, but he can't influence the other peers. So maybe someone can remove one part of the information, but not from all the other peers. And if the web index is distributed, it's distributed in some redundant way so that some information is always available in several places. And not on one only peer can remove all the information or one word or one web page from the index. And everyone can put information in the network. So everyone, this is kind of tool of information freedom. Everybody can put information, and this can be done in a cooperative way, because there are the network protocols to start distributed crawling. And so the software is open source, and everybody can see how it works and that there's effectively no censoring. So this is all about information freedom. It's possible to create a web information freedom with it, and now it's on the user to make this true. So everybody should participate in it. Yeah. The problem is, if there are two less peers, the information is low, and maybe there are not enough people who like it because the information is bad. But the more people participate, the better gets the quality, and maybe then more people think it's a good tool, and this makes even information better. So I hope you all joined this the YASI network. Thank you.
Okay, hi. My name is Frederik Thiele, and I'm a project leader at the Search Engine Lab at the University of Applied Science in Kaiserslautern. And there was a lot of theory now, and now I want to show you some practical examples. My topic is hacking the box, and let me see what I can do for you. First, I want to give you a short overview about this topic, and then I'll show you some interesting examples. Okay. Now, most people, I hope not here, think Google is just a search field where you just put in three words, click the search button, and get the best result. But there's a lot of more about Google, and there are a lot of advanced search functionalities in it. So you have here some examples. You can combine some keywords to extract phrases. You can combine keywords with some OR. You can exclude some keywords like spam or eBay in this example. Or you can search only for specific file types here. Then you can only search in the title of a web page or in the body text of a web page. You can look for special keywords in the URL or in this is an anchor thing is you can look when other websites link to your web page. You can search which keywords they use to link to your site. It's the same with the miserable failure example Mr. Boyermann said. So and the last one is you can only search for special sites. Like here, you can just search for EDU domains. Okay. What's the status? We have a big database with over 9 billion documents. And we have a really powerful search functionality. Okay, we can search for normal informations, but that's not so funny. So let's have some fun. But first, all I will show you now, it's not Google's fault, I have to admit this. And it will also work with Yahoo, MSN, and others. Google is only the provider. And don't try this at home. So let's start. Can I have this microphone?
Yeah. Hello?
Okay, then take it. Okay. So first of all, I will now show you some examples how you can really use this advanced search functionality to find interesting things in this huge database. So first of all, I have some examples in the area of data privacy. First of all, I search for some EDU sites, just the schools in the US, for some grades. And if I look here, I get some really interesting information about grades from some students, from Professor Lawrence A. Rove, with detailed information about the work of the student and so on. I will not that you can find this for my work. So let's take the next example. You can also look if you need some private information. You can look for some CVs online. And we only take this one with emails online, address online, and phone number. So there's a lot of information about all these people. Maybe we should call them. So let's go a little bit deeper. We have this Google example. Maybe you all know this FTP client, the WS FTP. It's a really old one. And it stores all your passwords and your sites in this file, in this ini file. So maybe we find some of these files online. Let's take a look. Oh, okay. This is a Google example. Okay. Here we have a lot of these files. And here we can just go and download them. Okay. But I've prepared an example. It took you just 5 minutes to figure it out. This one. And you see here, if you scroll down, there are some good examples of the gmu.edu. And there's a passport. But the problem is this password is encrypted. But no problem, we can just copy it and put it in our own ini file and it will work. So that doesn't help. Okay, we look down just a little bit more. Some other servers from this EDU domain. Okay. Maybe we should look who's behind this address. So it's George Mason University. Maybe you should not study informatics there, because security is not a good thing there. Okay. This one. So I can just go there, take this example. Takes this ini file. Okay. Here is it. I just have to put this OK button, but I think it's not a good idea to do this here. But. Okay, now the next one. There is a program out. It's called HitJammer. It's just a small CMS system, nothing special. But let me search for them. I have just to search for the string powered by HitJammer 1.0. Okay. Now we have to add just, maybe we should take this example. They have an admin interface also. And I have just to add the string. And now there are a lot of usernames, first name, last name, username, password, email address. Hey, someone was here already. Who was it? Okay. Let's go back. Now the thing is, people are stupid. And they use the same passwords everywhere. So maybe if we take some of these addresses, Yahoo Mail. Okay, we have also a password. Hey, it's just online, free information.
Okay, that's it.
And maybe I, okay. Okay, now it's the next example. Maybe some of you know this PHP admin. It's just a web interface for databases. It's a really powerful tool. You can do everything with your database with this tool. So we can search for it. And we found 1,600 pages with this PHP admin. Sounds cool for me. So let's look what we can do with it. Here's the first example. I just took 10 sites and took these two examples, so it's not a big deal. I not searched about the 1,000 pages to find this example. Okay. And they have databases. Okay, so, hey, they have a database. Hey, they have an online shop. Cool. Orders, articles, sessions. Sounds like fun. Let's look on their website. Oh, PHP service. Maybe I should order there. I can go directly. For you nerds, it's no problem. You can just order in the database. It's really easy. So cool interface. And you can, maybe you can calculate the prices by yourself. I don't know. Okay, look at the second one. We also have this one, okay. We have here also databases. Hey, they call it Motec24D. Maybe this is their URL. Okay. Bank transfer. Okay. Hedge. Okay, we've also some the customers. Let's do their orders. Okay. What's also products? That's cool. What are they doing? The Kundenkleber. Oh, I need this. Maybe we should change the price. Then it's cheaper for us. Okay, but let's take a look on the website. Motec24 Modellsport. Cool online shop. Okay. Now I have another example. But I have to do it with the Internet Explorer because it doesn't work here. So, yeah, this Linksys webcams, they use ActiveX, so it doesn't work here. Okay, so all of you know these wireless internet video cameras. Linksys is really popular on this. And they all have this one. Well, it's nice, I should buy one. They have admin and admin. This is the standard username and password. Okay, maybe we should look for some. 74 webcams, sounds like fun. Okay, we should take a look. Takes a moment. Okay, this is the first one. Give me a minute. Okay, let's take a look at the second one. Yeah, it's called Christmas Cam. Okay, come on. Good. So, Christmas for nerds. Okay, I have a third example. Takes a moment. Oh no. Oh, I think this guy turned off his webcam. Maybe he saw me. Okay. But I have some screenshots I made some hours ago for you. Just back up. Okay, I have this one. So it looks some minutes ago or some hours ago. Just take a look. I just clicked on setup and he doesn't change the standard password, so it was really easy. So I can really configure his webcam and I put this text. I have an eye on you on his webpage, so maybe he saw this. Okay, then go further. Oh, that's cute. We have his username. We have a username in his dynamic DNS system. Maybe we should have some fun with that later. Or you can put in your email address and get some motion detections. So, if he's awake, he could write you. Okay, so. Just wait a minute. Let's have some more fun with this guy. So we have his username. Maybe Google knows more about him. It's called Scott B256. Oh, there's a page. No. This page sucks, but maybe we should ask who's the owner of this domain. Okay. No. Hab ich jetzt falsch geschrieben? Okay, sorry for that. Okay. Let's search for him. Hey, cool. Hey, it's Scott, that's his real name. Now we have his address, his phone number, and his email address. Oh, that's good. Hey, it's MD. Maybe we can find more about him. Okay. Hey, 25 sites about Scott. Okay. Okay. Okie dokie. So now you can find more about him, some profiles and so on. And now the last thing for the one who asked, for the guy who asked some minutes ago, what could happen if you really have this webcam and you don't turn it off or you don't secure it? So this is just one example. It's maybe some of you know it. It's really popular here. So maybe it's not a good idea to take the standard password. Okay, thank you.